extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here.
Welcome, everybody, to Extra Time. Not from New York, New York, although we are in the studio in Manhattan. But Andrew Wiebe not here because his mom's in town. Literally no better reason to skip a show than to hang out with your mom. We are also Kalen-less, in which I wrote this in the rundown. I didn't know how to spell it because they spell it different ways. They're both named Kalen. You always thought we'd at least have one Kalen in the back pocket. We do not. Therefore, getting ready to cough in his first moments on Extra Time as a host.
No, you spelled Kalen Kyle wrong in the rundown.
So, did I?
Yeah.
How do you spell it?
K-A-Y-L-Y-N.
You know what's the nice part about this? Is the rundown is just for us, so yeah. No one would have known that.
No, but I had to call you out early on.
So Sasha Kljestan stepping in as my co-host for this show. Sasha, are you excited to be here?
I'm very excited to be here. This is my Extra Time, not debut.
Yeah.
Been interviewed on this show before as a player.
How often did you listen when you played?
Pretty often. I like your guys' show. You guys do a very good job.
Okay.
And obviously, I love MLS. I've been a fan of MLS since I was a kid. And now I'm honored to be an analyst in this wonderful studio.
Okay. So we interviewed you. What do you remember about that interview?
I remember I got emotional in that interview talking about some of the tough moments in my career with Wiebe.
Okay. Yeah. That's Weeby's dream.
It was a good interview. A small part of it was, missing out on the 2010 World Cup and how hard that was for me. And, you know, in most people's career, that's a moment that defines them. But, you know, I overcame.
Yeah.
Ended up having a pretty good career after that moment.
I think we did that exact interview with Greg Vanney as well. He's pretty emotional about it. That was a big time in his career. Obviously, 02, not 2010. He's a little older than you.
A little bit.
Yeah. Can he still keep up, though? Okay.
Well, he's all right.
He's having a long week, so we'll just leave that one on the side. We have a fantastic show for you. Rivalry week continues. Some absurd matchups coming this weekend, so we'll preview all of that. We will react to what we saw last night because it was our first full midweek match day in Major League Soccer. We have breaking news in Atlanta that we're going to react to right here, which is they might be selling Luis Araujo for more than $10 million. You heard that number right. And we're going to help preview the USU-20s as they'll kick off down in Argentina on Saturday. We've got Florian Balogun reaction because we haven't done that yet. And we have a mailbag. That's like a loaded show. You ready for this?
Very excited.
Have you? You've worked out? You've gotten yourself
No, I haven't
ready?
Prepared at all.
No?
Yeah.
It's only about an hour and 20 minutes, so you can do the other four, because I know you lock in for 5 hours at a time.
Five and a half.
Because of 3-6.
Five and a half hours.
So you'll have to probably go run off. We'll have you do the sprints after the game under the head athletic trainer, which always look like the worst part of the game.
That's actually the worst part. There's two worst parts of being a professional soccer player.
Okay.
One is, yes, when you don't start a game, and as soon as the game ends, you have to do some fitness to keep up with the starting group, which is just embarrassing.
Yeah.
It's the worst. And then the other part that sucks about being a pro soccer player is warming up.
Warming
just
up?
Just in general.
Before the game or
before
as a
before game,
sub?
Before practice. Yeah. I just wish I could go out in the field and start training and start playing immediately, which I could. I never needed to stretch or, like, I could go on the field and I could just start shooting as hard as I could my entire career. I don't think I had muscles that could get pulled. So
is there a license to be like, I don't need to go out and warm up right now?
No, because you want to be part of the team.
Got it.
You can't like, I mean, you can.
Did you screw around on the side and just like avoid as much as you could?
No, I tried really hard to always take the warm up seriously to make sure that the younger guys took the warm up seriously too. And like
such a leader.
Started to get focused for training.
Same way you fold your clothes in your locker. We learned about that before this.
That's right.
Yeah. It's all about the ethos, top to bottom.
Show up early every day.
Yeah.
On time.
When they do the x-ray of you and there's a dog, the dog is well kept though.
It's in me.
Yeah, it's in you and it lives in you. On you is our special Pride Tops for Pride Month. I am wearing one as well. You're sporting New York Red Bulls. Mine sporting the Colorado Rapids. Shout out to the Rapids, Rocky Mountain Cup this weekend, which we will talk about. These tops celebrate inclusion through sport with a loud, bold expression of love and unity. So all of the clubs have one. They will all start wearing them. I believe Toronto wore theirs yesterday. And of course, through Pride Month, through June, you can go on to MLSstore.com, get your clubs. I have, I think the last 3 years, I have all of them. And they are my favorite thing to wear to like a random MLS event or a US soccer event where it's like, everyone's going to like it and you still have your club there, but it's not like you roll through and you're like, look, orange FC Cincinnati in your face. It's like casual.
Got to dig a little deeper to see it.
Yeah. And I think
my daughter loves these jerseys. So okay. I'm bringing this one home. She sleeps in them. She's got the last three. Also.
I was about to say, I don't think that's her size.
It's way too big for her, but she loves these ones because obviously they're bright and colorful and they represent something really cool.
Yeah, it is a really good initiative. So we're really excited to see them out on the players. Let's talk about what we were excited to see yesterday. The best thing we saw, it was match day 13, as I said, on Wednesday night. Should I start or do you want to go first?
Go ahead.
So I'm going to start with Brandon Cambridge. Feels like an obvious one, right? Made his debut, scored the equalizer, then he scored the winner for Charlotte. I think you were on 360. He scored the opener and you said, is that his first goal? Because the energy he reacted to. And part of that was the build of trailing at home, the stadium, that stadium jumps. There's always sort of that energy. It feels like Charlotte plays a lot of these games of like, we cannot break through, but the pressure is building and mounting. And for him to come off the bench, gorgeous, the way he curls it past the keeper. He looks like he's done it a million times. That's like my favorite moments in MLS. And then for him to follow it up with the second is, that's just dream stuff.
But both of them were like very well taken goals. Control with the right foot, finish with the left. I can't tell if he's right footed or left footed. I don't know if anyone knows. They gave him the crown after.
Nice.
He's like Lord Cambridge now to me.
It's perfect.
This kid is amazing. And then they got to interview him after. The biggest smile. He just seems so excited and so proud of the moment. I mean, I remember my first goal. That just was an awesome, awesome moment last night.
So he was born in Brooklyn, moved to South Africa, then his family moved to Florida, then they moved to Vancouver. I would say that's an upgrade, but that's whatever people want. Grew up through the Vancouver Academy, then he went to the University of Portland, obviously one of the soccer powerhouses, and then his rights were traded for in this offseason. Started with Crown Legacy, moved into now Charlotte FC's first team, which just goes to say we will talk about youth development. But it's not linear for everyone. And I think one of the things that I try and harp on is also having a good academy doesn't mean the player will play for you. Vancouver got an asset for him. They got allocation money. He now is playing for a club that clearly wants him. We've seen it with Alex Mouille. We've seen it with Jacob Schaffelberg and Luca Petrasso. We've seen it with a number of players where it may not happen at your club, but it could happen for you. I do appreciate he kissed the crest on the way out. Like, it's his hometown club, which might as well endear yourself to the fans and be there. So that was a pretty epic moment. It was a big win for Charlotte, obviously coming off the back of their win against Atlanta. And again, a wide player scoring a goal. It feels like there needs to be some production from those wings. Justin Meerham has been Justin Meerham, which is everywhere he's gone since he left Orlando. There's not really expectations and he rises above it and is just a really good starting winger.
Yeah. Justin Meerham can pitch in with a couple of goals and a couple assists, whether he's starting or off the bench. We expect more production out of Uzwiak and Swiderski this season and Enzo Capetti. But anytime you get goals from midfield, it just helps alleviate that pressure off the attackers.
And it feels right now like Swiderski now is getting into the right spots because he can see that there will be balls played into the box where earlier this year, he's dropping deep to try and create. So now Cambridge off the other wing looks good. Uzwiak has had some better moments more recently. Charlotte plays against Nashville this weekend. That is a rivalry match. It is obviously two of the, I believe it's the closest trip for Charlotte to any other MLS team. And your moment of the match today was on the Nashville side.
On the Nashville side, yeah. Fafa Pikal, he scores the goal and he makes like the feed me sign celebration. And we got to interview him on 360 last night after the game. We asked him, were you just telling Hani Mukhtar that he needs to feed you more? And he said, no, it's a great story, actually. He was having breakfast that morning at a local restaurant in Nashville and two Nashville fans recognized him and paid for his meal. And he said, okay, if I score tonight, I'm going to do a celebration for you guys. And he was at the right place, the right time to smash that ball home from Hani Mukhtar. And that was just an amazing moment. That's just so cool. And I think really epitomizes what Nashville is all about.
Right.
When we see that stadium week in and week out, it is filled, whether it's just the Open Cup or a regular season game. Yeah. Those fans have really bought in down there and created an awesome atmosphere to play in.
And it was not a thing you would have always said, which is MLS player, home city, people recognize them, just eating breakfast, come over. Some markets, but not all of them. Yeah. But we're going to talk about a new market as well. I don't even think I promoted that off the top. We've got another expansion team coming to Major League Soccer. And I was talking to someone about the potential success of it and how it would work. And they were like, the last 8 or 9 have all hit immediately. Like, there is no, oh, will it be? Is this a soccer market? It just is now, which is exciting. Nashville being one of them. Hani, the assist, double step over, facing away from goal, blows by the defender. That it feels like for Hani is, if he can score and create, which means other guys are taking pressure off him, this can be him at his best.
Hani Mukhtar is the perfect player for Nashville SC. Over the past few years, he should have won the MVP in 2021 as well.
Oh my God, you're a Nashville fan on
I'm
here.
Not a Nashville fan.
I know, but they're so upset. He won one. It's okay. He got
he
it.
He should have. Is it best player in the league or is it most valuable player?
That is unfortunately
it's the question.
Yeah, and also what makes you the most valuable?
Exactly.
Yeah,
and he is the most valuable player to his team. Imagine where Nashville would be without Hani Mukhtar.
Okay.
For the past few years.
Yeah.
Not a playoff team.
No, but how many teams would be if you took out X player?
Agreed.
Okay.
But the numbers he's putting up on a consistent basis for 2.5 years now, even had a slow start to this season, had a little injury at the beginning, and now I think he's sitting on 6 goals and 6 assists.
Anders can clarify that
it's
for me.
The production out of this guy is amazing.
He is, I think, even above other pieces where you say, you know, this team has strengths on this side and this is the one guy on the other side. Some teams have one great defensive mid who holds everything together. Hani, it feels like the gap between him and other attackers at that club have been larger than other teams. They are obviously elite defensively as well. So they will face off against Charlotte this weekend in Charlotte. That one, 7:30 p.m. Eastern time. That should be a lot of fun. Every Charlotte home game is fun. That atmosphere is great. That crowd's great. I'm excited to see the Nashville fans that choose to travel for that one and sort of what it looks like. This is what it should be. We already did the Atlanta one, but like Nashville's an Eastern Conference team. They should have been an Eastern Conference team. It got thrown off for a year. COVID obviously didn't help. So now we're starting to establish those roots against the other teams in that area. And this one has a ton of potential to be a really entertaining one. Let's dig in to Wednesday night matches and then help us preview the weekend coming up. Let's start with Atlanta. We weren't going to, but then they sold Luis Araujo for a lot of money. They won 4-0 against Colorado. So on one side, fantastic night for them. Almada misses a PK, then scores a free kick banger like 5 minutes later. What is that? That's just like it's
baller.
It was too easy for him.
Baller.
Yeah.
Shouldn't have been a penalty. That's why he missed it.
Ball. Do you not think it should have been a penalty? I did instant replay yesterday. I hated the call of a penalty, but I couldn't find a reason to say it wasn't. Sasha can't even handle it.
Excuse me, I have to cough. I don't think it was a penalty. What can the defender do? The ball pops up and hits him in the arm.
It's also going away from goal, the deflection. So it's not even an advantage. Agreed that the time to react is poor. And like, let's just be human beings at some point. But now the rules are so, the silhouette, you had Christina Uncle with you and
anyway,
she said everyone's, so yeah.
He
so
misses the penalty.
Because he's a gentleman.
Because he's a great guy.
Yeah.
Great kid. World Cup winner. He said, I've won the World Cup, guys. I'm going to kick the ball out
of bounds. Danny Leyva, you will win a World Cup soon. I want to show you what it's like.
So we noticed as we watched the next 5 minutes of that game, it almost energized him where he had to prove himself again and be like, I've got to make up for that mistake.
It was also like, let's be real. They lost at home to Charlotte this weekend. They miss a penalty. You know, it's the Rapids where they're going to defend well and they're going to hit you on the counter. And like, it wasn't a given they were going to win this game. That was a dangerous moment. So he kind of had to.
But then we noticed him make one play in midfield where he comes out of the defender's blind spot to steal the ball and drive forward and play a 1-2 with Araujo. And we were like, oh, he's on a point to prove right now. And then we were lucky on 360. We popped to that game live when he was about to take the free kick because we were like,
you have to.
He's going to bang this one.
And it was absurd. It was exactly where he wanted it to be. It was with power. It was with energy. And it's over the wall. It's in the corner. I don't think Yarbrough moves, which is always feels good, I think, as an attacking player. He has now done this a couple times. He is in that territory. We've had a few guys in MLS over the past 10 or so years where free kicks from distance are legitimate threats.
Dude, I'm struggling. My throat is dry. Sorry. But yes, I think you were going to go along this line, and I was going to say there's none as good as Giovinco. It was like...
I wasn't really going anywhere, but I appreciate you picking that up.
Right now, it seems like Thiago Almada has a free kick anywhere within 25 yards, and you have to be worried that he's going to score. There are very few people that have played in MLS that have been like that.
Yeah.
Giovinco was the best one.
I believe he holds the record for free kick goals from outside the box. The other name that pops to mind is Michel, which if you don't know, you should know. Dude was an expert, as Sasha is, at being a host.
Do you know who's second in free kicks?
From outside the box in MLS history?
Well, there's not many free kicks that happen inside the box.
Fair. Good point. That is a really good point. Could be indirect.
That's true. Very rare. Is it second? Anders is going to have to pop in our ear here.
Anders. You can't say it wrong on this show. You can only do that on 360, which is allowed.
I think number two is a pretty obscure name, if I'm
free kick, like a free kick specialist.
Who scored the most free kicks?
Is it Juninho for like the year and a half at Red Bulls?
I think it's Jeff Lorenowitz.
No, the pile driver.
Smash the ball.
He scored a free kick goal. I still remember this for the Revs in Colorado on a Sunday night on Fox Soccer Channel. That was like one of the best free kicks I've ever seen. Are you texting Jeff Lorenowitz right now to ask him?
No, I'm texting Anders.
Okay. Anders can hear you, by the way. He's on the show. So he'll just say it into your ears if he has it. He doesn't have it. So, but Lorenowitz scored this goal that was like one of the best free kicks. And I remember the broadcaster on the game compared it to a goal that a Barcelona player had scored earlier that day. And I was like, that's kind of absurd. But listen, he's in the record book. I think he's like top four all time in appearances for a field player as well. So he's had a lot of chances. FC Delco legend. I learned that this weekend as well while I was doing my thing down at MLS Next Flex. Sasha said that he had 5.5 hours in him and then 15 minutes and he had to take a break.
It's poor for me. Sorry, guys.
It's borderline unacceptable.
Getting a cough attack.
But here's the thing, and this is the development of youth in Major League Soccer, is I don't have any other options, so I have to play you. So that's how you're going to get better.
That's how I am going to get better. I'm going to get games under my belt, and next time I come back, I'm going to be better.
And eventually you'll be Efra Alvarez.
No, eventually I'll take your job.
That's great. Then I don't have to work anymore, which I would appreciate. Let's move on to the sale, though, the big moment. This is not official from Atlanta United, but Felipe Cardenas and Doug Roberson, who are the two people who have a finger on the pulse of what goes on with Atlanta more than anyone, have both now confirmed from good sources saying that Luis Araujo will be sold to Flamengo for what they are hearing is an 8-figure fee. What they believe is he will be sold now. He will leave on June 24th to go. So he will be with Atlanta United through the next month or so till that transfer window opens. Flamengo, obviously, at this point, the biggest club in Brazil, probably one of the few clubs that could afford a number like that. So he'll get the chance to go home. What's your reaction to this?
Love this from Atlanta.
Yeah.
Shrewd business.
Just
I think they paid, what, $11.5 million for him?
Something like that.
Pretty much breaking even, minus the massive salary you paid him for the past couple of years.
Yeah.
Hasn't produced enough for what you're paying him. Mm-hmm. Has not even come close to what we've seen. We see him play week in and week out. And once or twice a game, he'll dribble by somebody or dribble by three people and make something happen.
And then waste it.
Yeah, and he wasted it. Yesterday, he scored a great goal. A fantastic right winger goal, cutting in on his left, slotting it back to the near post underneath the defender's legs. But not enough consistent production. And now this opens up a massive spot for Garth Lagerwey to go have some fun with for Atlanta United.
And let's put it in context. He came from Lille at the number you said. He was playing more for a better team at a higher number than Dennis Bouanga. And he is nowhere in the conversation of even effective wingers in Major League Soccer. Like you said, when you watch him play, you get it. Like, the guy can do anything he wants with the ball. None of it fits in a team and none of it works. And now, even though you lose money on the salary, Garth Lagerwey is going to get a chance to sign his version of.
Yeah. And this comes down to mentality. You see Dennis Bouanga play and he's relentless. He goes after the goal every time he gets the ball. I think of other DPs in the league. Shaqiri, mentality doesn't look great.
Right.
Doesn't show up week in and week out. I don't know what he's like in training, but when I think back to other DPs or around the league, Robbie Keane was the best. David Villa was the best because every goal they scored, it was like the first goal they've scored in their career. They wanted to prove every minute of every game that they were better than everybody else. I don't see that out of Araujo.
And this is sort of the question mark when you go the shift of DPs, which is former stars maybe coming down in their career, but have been star players versus is a really good squad player at a high level team going to be a star? The quality is there. The question is, can he be the guy and can he lead other players? Luis Araujo definitely has the vibe of like, I'm happy to beg guys and beat guys. I don't really need to score. That's not what I'm here for. And it's like, well, that's what we're paying you for. But you mentioned the work for Atlanta. So for Atlanta United now, Marcelino Moreno, they've sent him out on loan. They will sell him at the end of the year. They changed out the center back. That was their big money signing as well last year. And now with Luis Araujo, for the most part, all of those like dead contracts that they didn't want to be a part of coming into this year are now all gone. Even if you don't replace him at a high level, it feels like a cleaner, more coherent squad that Garth Hargaway has built for Pineda.
And then Yakumakis is the DP that looks like he has the mentality. Last week, they lost. He called out his teammates. He said, we don't train hard enough. We need to play better in front of our home fans. And then you saw him. I watched him as he subbed into the game yesterday. He sprinted on the field and was like, okay, if I've got 30 minutes, I'm going to make the most of these 30 minutes. And that goal he scored late in the game was unbelievable. The first touch with the chest, pop it over Yarbrough, and then the strength and power to get there on the goal line to make sure he was going to get his goal. Like, this is a guy that can contend for the golden boot and who is not afraid after only being on the squad for 3 months
to call
some people out, but then to back it up with the way he was going to play midweek. Awesome.
You assume it'll be a winger to bring in, especially if Almada is there. Do you worry that Almada, the rumors that he also leaves in the summer, that you take both these players out of the team at the same time?
That's a problem. If you losing Almada at any point, whether it's midseason or after the season, you're going to have to spend to replace him. And who knows if you're ever going to be able to get somebody as good or as talented. The World Cup winner at 21, it's unbelievable. So, big questions. If Miles Robinson were to leave, if Thiago Almada were to leave, the team changes drastically.
It seems like Luis Araujo would be just a drop in the bucket at that point if you're losing Almada. If this rumor is correct, I think we cannot stress how good business this is for Atlanta to just at least flip the money they spent to be able to use it again and not lose for a player who has not produced for them. So big news for Atlanta United fans, big news for Garth Lagerwey. This is sort of why he went to Atlanta. When he was able to make moves in Seattle, he did great business, but he didn't have the open checkbook that they have to be like, here's my top five targets. Okay, which one can I get on a deal? Now he can sort of pick his top five targets and go get them. And it's going to be fun to watch for Atlanta United going forward. Let's go down to Texas here. Austin FC going out to Seattle. 2-1 win last night. Rigoni getting a second assist on Finley's opener. And Austin now turning a bit of a corner. Zardes gets a goal. They're starting to get some results. A 2-1 win at Seattle. Big performance for them. Do you feel anything different about this Austin group?
Not really.
Yeah.
Not really. I've come to realize that they overperformed last season. They were scoring way more goals than they probably should have. And that made the expectations this season really rise. Mm-hmm. Obviously a terrible crashing out of the Champions League against the Haitian squad. Not good. It's been disappointing to see nobody else step up in the absence of Driussi. I do think Driussi is one of the most talented players in the league and can do a lot of things on his own, but he needs other players to step up around him. It's good that Zardes got his goal.
Yeah.
That's massive. Hopefully that gives him a little bit of confidence and kind of add some consistency to his play, that if he can start picking up some goals. John Gallagher is their leading scorer. That's not good enough. He's a good player too.
Yeah,
very versatile. Could play anywhere on the field, but you need your strikers to start stepping up.
I think it's positive that Josh Wolf has found something that's not the exact same setup without Driussi. They've gone to three in the back, which has pushed actually Gallagher and Lundqvist farther into the attack, where I think they're both some of the better attacking fullbacks in Major League Soccer. He swapped Rigoni to the left wing, which has brought him to life in that he lurks on the far post. He's not a creative player anymore. Yeah. He's like a second forward, but it's working for him.
He's set up a few goals now.
He had the assist in this game. He had an assist two games ago. The game before that as well in Open Cup, he had a goal the game before that. This is the best run of his career. They got a goal from Redis last week, which is absurd to say. And now Fagundes returns from injury in this game. He probably won't play on the left because Ragone's there, so he's going to have to figure it out on the right. But I do have a little feeling now that they've pulled out of the, like, no Driussi, what do we do?
Sure.
Guys are starting to take the responsibility. Josh Sewell's been a bit more flexible. They overperformed last year, but they're underperforming this year.
Yeah.
They have to find that level in between, which is probably fourth or fifth in the West, which I think they'll be fine with, to just get a home game, you know, be a home team in the playoffs. You have some playoff experience from last year. What can you lean on that with and get a little bit further? They're starting to get a little bit closer. On the flip side for Seattle, back-to-back losses. They face off against Vancouver at 10:30 p.m. Eastern time, rivalry week this week. Of course, a Cascadia Cup game, two teams coming off losses. What's the feeling around Seattle? Do you have any worries?
I'm not worried about Seattle at all. They've got a veteran group. They've got a core group of players that have played for the Seattle Sounders for 5+ years now. The one thing that does worry me is playing without Christian Roldan. I think seeing his absence these past few weeks has really underlined exactly how much he means to this team, that you can put him in any position. He will fight every inch of the field for every single ball. He'll chip in with goals and assists from midfield. He's like the heartbeat of that team. And he's one of those guys that if you looked at the Seattle Sounders, I think over the past 8 years, however long he's played there, and their record with him and record without him, it would be obvious how important he is.
Yeah.
So I hope he gets back on the field soon, as he's been dealing with these concussion symptoms. But I'm not worried about the Seattle Sounders. They're solid defensively or organizationally. They're good. Rui Diaz could get back healthy, would be awesome for them, but I'm not worried about them.
Yeah, it's okay. They've got an elite goal scorer in Jordan Morris as well. We'll get to that as we go along. Philadelphia Union 0-0 against DC United. This was, remember, the matchup that basically got, I don't even think it was Losada fired. I think it was Ashton after Losada fired and got Wayne Rooney hired last year, because they gave up 7 goals. They gave up, I think, 13 across the two matches. 0-0 tie at Philly. They felt they should win. Rooney's quote coming out of it was, "We're actually gutted with the way that we didn't get 3 points." A 3-game stand here, or a 3-game run at Cincinnati versus Nashville. At Philly, they lost 2-1 to Cincy. They picked up draws in the other two, coming off 3-game winning streak. It feels a little different for DC, even just to make that comment compared to what it was last year. Like, this is at least a shift in the right direction.
Totally. Totally. You lost a combined 13-0 in 2 games to Philly last year. So a 0-0 draw on the road, you will take that.
Yeah.
And they think that the Galaxy game is a very winnable game for them at home. They think that they can physically dominate the Galaxy and bully them in that game.
Who battles with Benteke?
No idea.
Yeah.
Caceres is 30,
do they start Zavaleta? 30,
I don't know. I think Jalen Neal starts, who is...
It's not a right matchup for
him. No, he's not a physical defender.
Yeah.
He's 18. He's an amazing passer of the ball, an amazing reader of the game, but not a physical defender. So that will be tough for them. And then how physical is Derek Williams and Steven Birnbaum going to be with Chicharito or Jovalich, whoever starts up top? Most likely Chicharito. It's going to be tough for the Galaxy.
Jalen Neal just... Zeller Allen snatching souls in that one.
That was a learning experience for a very young center back to
just
know,
force him wide,
force him to his left foot and hope that Jonathan Bond gets his angles right. Yeah.
It's not your fault if he scores from that spot.
No, but you've got to make him go to his weaker foot away from the goal a little bit.
Yeah.
Listen, Jalen Neal has been a revelation for the LA Galaxy. I've played with him for the last few years. He should have been getting minutes even earlier. Yes. He's awesome kid. And he's going to be a U.S. national team center back one day. He just needs to get a little bit stronger in his 1v1 duels. And that's a perfect moment for him to go back, watch that video 100 times and learn from it.
Yeah.
And I'm sure he will.
And ideally, he's not in that spot, which then goes down to why he's even playing for the Galaxy and what the Galaxy need to do for DC United. You said it. This feels like a tasty matchup for them. It feels like Benteke's on the road to at least being an all-star this year, if not Golden Boot stuff, if not best 11 stuff. He's been elite. Philadelphia.
Do you think he can compete for the Golden Boot? Because I don't think he can, but Bradley Wright Phillips says he can.
Historically, he has not been healthy for large stretches. Quality wise, yes. If I had to pick a group of names, I would not pick him because that's not been his past. Agreed. Is that where you fall on it because of that?
I think he could stay healthy for the whole year, and I still don't think he would.
Because the team won't.
Yeah, not enough chances created, and he's a little one-dimensional. He's just got to get balls in the box and bully a center back. He's not the type of guy who's going to beat people off the dribble and create his own shot like Denny Bouanga. So strikers like that depend more on service, which they're getting better at. Mm-hmm. DC is fully understanding,
set up for it.
Fully understanding how to play to Benteke's strengths, which is good. It's fun to watch.
Yeah.
Not golden boot for me.
Okay. Philadelphia are hosting the New England Revolution this weekend. That is a rivalry matchup. I don't know, up and down I-95. I guess if you are located on the highway, you immediately become a rival. I'm not really a car person, so I wouldn't know. But you could take the Amtrak. I took the Amtrak down this weekend. You get this little box with the train around the side when you buy a snack. I buy snacks just to get that box. I just want everyone to know that. And if anyone has worked at Amtrak or works around Amtrak and has extra boxes, I would take one.
My family and I are going to take the Amtrak up to New York from D.C. after the All-Star game.
Love that. It's a great trip. Also, you get to go to Union Station. There's a new train station here in New York. It's a vibe.
Awesome.
There's a part where the train goes over the water and you're like on the water. It's fun.
Cool.
Yeah. I'm so excited for you.
I'm excited for my kids too. Yeah. We're leaving the All-Star game in DC and coming up to New York and going on a European vacation for 3.5 weeks. Oh,
the Jesse Marsh style trip?
No, we're definitely packing more than just a backpack. And
where in Europe? Let
my kids sleep on beds. So okay. Unlike Jesse Marsh's trip, but we're going to go to Italy, Croatia, Belgium, and London.
Okay. Is Croatia...
right across the water.
No, I know where Croatia is. What is it's your Croatia. Family is from?
My dad lives in Bosnia now. Okay. My dad is from, he's a Bosnian Serb.
Okay.
He lives in Bosnia, but he's going to meet us in Croatia on the island of Brač for 4 days.
Ooh, living large.
It's my retirement year, you know?
Yeah. It's a golden year for you.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. let's keep rolling into the games here. Anders is like, you're kidding me. I could talk vacations the whole time, though. I haven't been to Croatia yet. Do you know about the national park with the 50 waterfalls?
I don't.
That's a thing you have to do. We'll talk about it. We'll get there. You're going to eat a lot of meats on skewers, though, which is exciting. I'm jealous of that as well. Let's keep rolling.
You look like a guy who loves a good meat on a skewer.
I like anything that I can't pronounce. If there's food that I cannot pronounce. I went to a Serbian restaurant here for the World Cup. Food was phenomenal. Atmosphere, great. Everyone was nicer than I expected, which I understand is my own problem. That's my own issue. But I think it's called Kafana down on the Kafana, Lower East Side.
I know it? I know the restaurant.
Have you been?
I have not been, but I've been told about it by some of my teammates in my 6v6 soccer league.
Oh, really?
We'll get into that
later. We'll get into that later. Let's talk your former team. New York Red Bulls going up to TFC, 0-0 draw in this one. John Tolkien being JMI in this one, just literally making tackles, wagging the finger, clear goal line clearances. Do you feel, or is there a talk in the Red Bull universe about the Troy Lessain vibes or energy or anything like that?
Well, I read a good article about Troy Lessain about how Jesse Marsh has kind of been his mentor over the past year and how getting his pro license, he did a project on Jesse. And obviously, I know Jesse very personally. He's been very open about helping young coaches and guiding them and being open with his information and coaching styles. And so Troy, even on the sidelines, looked like little Jesse Marsh.
He did in the attire.
But three games, three shutouts for Troy Lessain, and they looked good. They were all over Toronto FC early. They were playing at a really fast Red Bulls tempo that I think Toronto couldn't keep up with early on. And that's a good result for them to go on the road, keep it tight at the back, get a point out of Toronto.
It felt, though, quick tempo, final third, but more connection and less direct to me.
Yeah, which I think he has been open about, Troy Lessain.
That's his background.
We want a little bit more of trying to figure out how to break teams down when we have the ball and not just being uber reliant on winning the ball and going straight to goal. Because what happens when a team sits back? This has always been the Achilles heel of the New York Red Bulls. And Chris Armas tried this to get more with the ball. Troy Lessain is trying it. Hopefully he can figure that out without losing the complete identity of the team.
Speaking of Jesse Marsh, I think I have an hour and 20 minute YouTube video of him doing a presentation to like the Chicago Youth Soccer Association.
It's amazing, right?
And it is every detail of what he does.
Because a lot of coaches are not like that. Yeah, they are very private with the way that they coach. And that's very cool of Jesse to be open and share his ideas.
On the flip side for Toronto, Insigne got a breakaway. Bernadeschi got a pullback. They don't score. Io missed a big chance as well. TFC have all these injuries. To have those guys miss big chances in a game that you could have stolen, that just feels unsustainable for
TSC. Another home game without 3 points where you have chances to win the game is just the pressure is piling on Bob Bradley.
New York hosts Montreal this weekend. TFC travel to Austin, which is unfortunate because I think a year ago this would have been Josh versus Bob, open, expansive, who can play, who can do what, and now it's kind of like
who can just who gets an easy
three, who gets a 3 points that they haven't been able to get and get over the line. All right, let's dig into some of our biggest matches from last night, which we'll then, of course, look into this weekend. And let's start with SKC against LAFC. LAFC, Dennis Bouanga gets the goal. They draw 1-1 at home. Hollingshead thought he had the winner. Inch offside from, I believe it was Bogush, in the buildup. Either way, for LAFC, it's not ideal, but Bouanga scores. He feels good. Any big thoughts about LAFC before he moved to the Midwest?
This was a crazy game because 1 minute after Bouanga scored the opener, Opoku had a chance where he intercepts a ball, nutmegs the defender, gets in on Kendall McIntosh, and McIntosh gets off his line super fast to surprise him and make the save. The game could have been over and done with within 15 minutes, and Kansas City hung on. Bouanga had another chance a few moments later as well to make it 2-0, doesn't get there. It's the one where he cuts inside and misses to the far post. And then Johnny Russell gets a goal, and this game was back and forth after that. It was a pretty even game. So what could have been an easy LA victory, some resilience out of the Kansas City team to stay with the game, get the result, and give them some positive energy heading into this weekend.
And it felt like SKC. So for Johnny Russell, by the way, his 50th career KC goal. He has been one of the greatest signings in MLS history. He wasn't brought over as a DP. That's how good he's been. He's now been elevated into that spot, but he's been phenomenal 1v1 as a finisher, whatever it is. You did see, I think, for SKC, some of the good moments with Pulido, which is he is a creator equal to a finisher. And now you're starting to see why Shallowy and Russell are so important around them. Kinda came off the bench in this one. LAFC face off against San Jose at 10:30 p.m. Eastern time. That's a rematch, of course, of that game that was at Levi Stadium, which was phenomenal to watch just 2 weeks ago. But the big one, St. Louis hosting SKC. The first time ever these two teams will face off. 9:30 p.m. Eastern time. It is in St. Louis. And SKC has this positive vibe to them. You said that's like kind of the right way to go into things. I'm going to frame this matchup in this way, and I could be wrong. You can tell me I'm wrong. To me, this feels a bit like El Tráfico, where LAFC was the shiny new thing on the block. The Galaxy were the historic thing, laboring at times. But head-to-head for 3 or 4 years, the Galaxy were able to keep LAFC at bay and sort of say, it's not going to be this easy. You don't just come and take this, even though they weren't doing the big things in the league. St. Louis, it's less of a positive run lately, but they are the shiny new toy. They're excited. They're on their feet every single game. They've been winning. And now it's SKC's chance to sort of say, I want to put you back in your place, though.
Yeah, not totally the same as the Hudson River Derby either, but because we had a good team at New York Red Bulls.
And NYC didn't
have a good start, but we smashed them for the first few years. You know what I'm saying?
Just red wedding. Let's just get a red wedding in.
It's interesting that it's like, these teams with their history, they've got to protect that and they fight extra for that. But the best thing about these rivalry games is that superstars show up. And Bradley Wright Phillips scored like every time he played against the NYCFC. I assisted like every single one of those. Mm-hmm. And David Villa seemed to score every single time. Zlatan Ibrahimovic and Carlos Vela. Yeah. They just show up. So for Kansas City and St. Louis, who are going to be these superstars that emerge that every time I play that team, it's me. Yeah. I'm the guy. I don't know who it is. Is Klaus back? Could he be the guy? Is Pulido going to be like, I'm going to show up now. Now it's going to be the time that I score these goals and I put St. Louis down every single time. So that's going to be really fun to watch.
There's a few question marks about starting and sort of the groups we'll see. For SKC midweek, obviously you have to rotate. Gotti Kinda coming back from a long injury. So started on the weekend, didn't start midweek, came off the bench.
He should start again on the weekend.
So the expectation then is that he would.
Yeah.
So you think it's him and then probably Remy Voltaire in that midfield. And then you have a defensive midfielder behind them. But it feels like Kinda, like, last week, that was sort of the Kinda's back.
Yeah.
And we have another guy.
Yeah.
He's not an elite chance creator.
No, but he's just a very good player.
And that's, you just need one more?
Yeah.
Okay. And then Eric Tommy. That was the other one that Eric I was Tommy. Thinking. Yeah, yeah, right. So do you think you could start...
When you get Tommy and Kinda in there together, you get, you know, they play that 4-3-3-1 yeah. pivot, 2-8s that kind of rotate, both being creators. And they're both just very good players. I don't think either of them are elite in yeah. MLS, but two very good players. That creates a pretty good midfield in MLS.
But the issue for SKC for years was... They didn't have enough defensive support when it was two more attacking eights, quote unquote, unless Roger was doing everything.
Sure.
Do you worry about Kinda and Tommy as a pairing?
Not really.
Yeah.
As I'm always more of the belief that you can control the game with good players in the midfield, not having to have such a defensive presence. Look at LAFC.
Yeah.
Ilya Sanchez is their defensive midfielder
who couldn't do it at SKC.
He's not that athletic.
Yeah.
But, you know, they play through him with the ball, not without the ball. And he's an organizer. And so it's definitely possible. There are different ways of playing the game.
So let's talk about this matchup then, because St. Louis high pressing. They want to, you know, they don't need the ball. They want to press you. KC does want the ball, even when they haven't been scoring this year. They've dominated possession. They play in the final third, a large part of it. Do you think SKC sticks to that fundamental for this game?
I don't know, because yeah. I'm thinking back to the old Hudson River Derby too, where Patrick Vieira was like, no, mm-hmm. this is the way we play.
Yeah.
And it was like,
and it didn't work.
This is the way we play as Red Bulls. And, you know, neither team wanted to change, which I applaud, because stick true to your identity, but also don't get smashed 7-0 yeah. by keep passing the ball out of the back, kick the ball up the field away from your goal every once in a while, you know? So it'll be interesting to see what Kansas City does. Last night against LAFC, they still tried to play through the press, and they played through really well at different points in the game. So will be interesting to see. I would guess the game's in St. Louis, right? Mm-hmm. That's that Kansas City plays a little bit more pragmatic and perhaps a little bit more direct early in the game.
Dennis Bouanga, I think after the game, said that's the best team we've played soccer-wise about SKC. And you saw a lot of, like you just said, of like playing through pressure, finding good spots. There's a lot of individual quality there. They seem to have settled at center back with the new additions and sort of finding a pairing. McIntosh got the start over Polskamp, which is interesting. I think part of that is like Polskamp sort of stuck in the, it was bad, so we're not going to go back to you.
Yep.
I don't think it's his fault.
No.
But McIntosh has been good, and so he it's his good. Spot to lose now. The expectation is if Tim Melia is still hurt, Klaus back. If he is, if he isn't, how big is it for St. Louis?
It's big. They've shown to not be as creative without him. And not only that, he does just a lot of the dirty work, and he shows up in the right spots, and positionally when the ball turns over, he's in the right spot. He's that position A, they call it, the A pass. As soon as you win the ball and you play forward straight into a center striker, he's always there. So they've definitely missed him in the past few weeks.
And it feels, one of the big things I've said is everything because of that happens deeper, and the mistakes they made in the first 2 months, we're in the attacking third. They didn't lead to goals. Now they lead. Look at the Portland game. It's turnovers and mistakes, but everything's deeper, yep. and it's goal-scoring chances.
Yep.
St. Louis, I think they've won one of their last seven. Not the run they want to come in on, but this, again, is one of those moments where it doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
You beat SKC at home, yep. red versus blue, and we will talk about this as we come out of it, because we don't actually know what this will look like. But the feeling is this is going to be one of the great moments in MLS history. Like, yep. just to set the stage.
The atmosphere is going to be unreal.
Yeah. St. Louis is one of the great soccer markets in American history. The rivalry between these cities exists across college sports, pro sports, as people. The blue versus red, it's Royals versus Cardinals. It's everything that exists. Weeby was yelling about it while going out and to hang out with his mom before we did this. So he's trying to get a little bit in it of, I don't know, some college rivalry thing that happened that I don't care about. But this is going to be fun. This is going to be special. I forgot Anders went to Mizzou, and like, weirdly, as a Seattle guy, cares about this. It's going to be fun. It's going to be special. It's obviously the game everyone's going to tune in for. 9:30 p.m. Eastern time. And then we'll talk about sort of what we see coming up on Monday, because I think it's one of those that we have to experience. Like, we didn't know. I like that you brought it back to the New York one. We didn't know what that would look like.
Yeah.
Where like then that sort of set the stage, and El Tráfico was a bit more like, we had the Chivas LA Galaxy. You had sort of an idea, and it sort of ran its course there. Obviously, Zlatan threw a wrench in it. I don't know what this one's going to feel like, but I'm excited.
I know exactly what it's going to feel like, because I've played in a lot of rivalries.
Yeah.
The rivalries between the two teams mean nothing
compared to the cities
without the fans.
Yeah.
the fans are what make it. Mm-hmm. They care so much. Like, I played at games at Anderlecht where we were going to play Standard Liège. And our fans told us, if you guys go to Standard and don't win this game, you're not getting on the bus and going back home. We'll barricade the bus.
That's fun.
This game means more than any other game this season. And so if you think about El Tráfico or the Hudson River Derby or anything, you just feel the atmosphere in the stadium that when you get on the pitch, you know this game means more. And now when we think about St. Louis, look at every home game St. Louis has had against Portland.
Yeah.
What does it matter?
Right.
Every fan in there is standing the entire game
after waiting 2 hours because of a weather delay.
Exactly. Yeah. And the atmosphere is amazing. Every Kansas City game for the past decade at their new stadium has been like that as well. It's the atmosphere in both those stadiums, regardless of who they're playing, is awesome. Now when they play each other, it's going to be off the rails.
And you add in the Cascadia, what we've seen, which is like every time Portland's bad, they beat Seattle, right? Because it is like a lifeline of like, here's a chance to make up for two bad months.
Exactly.
No one will care if you beat your rival.
And if I look at the standings right now, if St. Louis wins that game, that puts them onto 22 points tied with LAFC.
Yeah.
You forget about the last seven games. Doesn't matter. Yeah. You're back in the hunt. You're back in the playoff position to be close to the supporter shield after a bad run. That's MLS.
Hopefully Klaus is back, because Klaus's mother needs to see him score goals. It makes her happy. It's why she watches MLS. So I hope for that for her. I hope for all the fans. Just have a great time. Send us all of your thoughts after it. Send us videos. Send us pictures. You can tweet at Extra Time. You can tweet at me. You can obviously tweet at Andrew. He will probably troll you to some extent about something. I can't anticipate what that is right now. Let's move to what now might be the best matchup in the history of this rivalry, a new one. FC Cincinnati, 3-0 win against Montreal already this week. Columbus Crew, a 2-0 win against LA Galaxy. We know this as the Hell is Real Derby. It's the one time I'm allowed to say that word on this show. So I'll probably say it a lot of times just to get my fill in. For Cincinnati, though, this is sort of, you said what you've been waiting for, the game against Montreal. Just 3-0, a dominant performance.
Yeah, they're a perfect 7-0 at home. Six of those were by one goal.
Yeah.
This one was finally an FC Cincinnati performance that Pat Noonan will be happy about. Three good goals, passion in the stadium, dominant performance against a team, Montreal, that was surging and that hadn't given up a goal in five, six games, something like that. So I love Cincinnati personally because they play a 3-5-2, my preferred formation.
Okay.
And Pat Noonan has it figured out that to play the 3-5-2, the whole thing is built around Lucho Acosta. He's one of the best playmakers in the league. It frees him up in the middle of the field, and they run on the counterattack so well. And Alvaro Barreal is playing out of his mind this season as left wing back. So this is the best Cincinnati we've ever seen. And then Columbus in the last few years, minus when they won the cup, this is the best Columbus we've seen recently. So these two teams, both coming off big wins, both high up in the standings in the East, this creates a really good matchup.
Is the 3-5-2 because it gives freedom to a 10?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it's like
with two forwards in front.
Yeah. Okay. Two good forwards that run a lot.
Yeah.
Wing backs that work their butts off. Defensive mids that just give the ball to the number 10.
So it's you would coach a team that you would want to have played in.
Oh, yeah.
So if anyone wants to hire Sasha as the coach of their team, know it's going to be built around a 10.
Give me $15 million to buy a number 10, and I will build the rest of the team around him.
You don't need money for the rest of it. You just go vet minimums.
Just get wing backs that can run like crazy.
We'll just grab the 6v6 Bowery team. We'll throw Jeff Lorenowitz in there.
Let's go.
We'll call up Chad Marshall. We'll see what he's doing. We'll throw that group together.
I'd get us to the playoffs.
You could probably make the playoffs if you tried hard every single game. One thing to note for Cincy, no Sergio Santos, no Brenner in this game. They still get the three goals. Dom Baggi got the start up top, but it was Lucho on the second goal. High pressing. He wins it back. And then Brandon Vasquez, the third goal, which is just something they need to see for him. They lead the Shield race right now. Columbus, as you said, a 2-0 win over the LA Galaxy. This is some of the best soccer they've played coming into this one. Let's talk about this matchup, 7:30 p.m. coming up. It's similar to what we just said with SKC of styles. Nanse wants possession. He wants his team to be on the ball. He wants to get numbers into the attack, take some risks. And then Pat Noonan is, at his core, a high-pressing coach. Yep. They've done so less this year because of the struggles.
I think more on the counterattack for FC Cincinnati lately that has been really good, which will play right into their hands. So Columbus has to be very good. And you know, there's different terms, rest defense or proactive defending, that when Columbus is in the ball, they're not getting overstretched and they know where Lucho Acosta is and Brandon Vasquez is, and that somebody is tight to them even when they're in possession. They've always got to be thinking out what will happen if we lose the ball. This has been the Achilles heel of the LA Galaxy this year. Their proactive defending has been awful. They lose the ball in bad spots and it's gone the other way. Columbus, the way they started against the LA Galaxy in like almost a 4-4-2 with some freedom from Zelarayan and Cucho Hernandez to move around. Matan played on the right. Christian Ramirez played up front, occupying center backs. It worked really well. Zelarayan came out at halftime. I wonder if that was a predetermined sub just to get him his 45 minutes and get him ready for the weekend, but their attack looked really good.
I like Cucho as that loose player. We saw it the first 3 weeks. They actually started him once out left. He created a goal for Zelarayan. He cuts in and scores himself. He did so in this game.
I want to see him up front. I want to see him in the box. I mentioned this to you that I saw him last year come in and just start banging in goals with pure effort and class in the box, in around the penalty spot, like an old Joseph Martinez. You think he has more than that, though?
I think he's a better all-around soccer player than Joseph, and that's not a knock on Joseph, right? The thing Joseph was elite at is the thing you have to do. And if you're Pipo Inzaghi or Ruud van Nistelrooy, it literally doesn't matter. You're a world-class player because you're great at that thing.
Yeah.
I saw more from Cucho last year, and just I thought a lot of those goals he helped create from the back. I think his feet are good. Clearly his vision is good, right?
And he's a good passer.
And the way he pulls people around in this, you know, in this goal, we talked about Jalen Neal, but Eric Zavaleta is chasing him into midfield. Lost. He's the one who plays this ball through. Why does it matter? I guess is my big question.
It doesn't matter as long as Wilfred Nancy keeps another striker on the field that will occupy center backs and be in that goal scoring position, which he's done now with Russell Rowe on some occasions and Christian Ramirez. Yeah.
Your concern is if Cucho's the lone forward and he comes out of that area and plays as a false nine,
then there's nobody
there. It's just Zelarayan runs.
There's nobody there.
Okay. I think that's fair. But in general, if you were a part of this team, don't you look at it and say, wow, this guy Cucho is willing to give up his goals for the good of the team? Isn't that something that emboldens everyone? Or you're not.
I don't know if he's doing it for the good of the team or if it's more he just wants to be on the ball more often and show himself more often.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize that passing could be selfish too.
No, it's not that. It's
creating. I get what you're saying. As a forward, you don't get touches if you sit high.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Erling Haaland has said it's his dream to touch the ball five times in a game and score five goals.
Right.
He doesn't care.
Yeah.
He only cares about the final thing.
Okay.
Cucho Hernandez doesn't seem to be that player. He wants to get involved in the attack. He wants to be one of those players that links up and sets people up also. He'll drift wide. He'll cut inside. He wants to shoot from distance. Maybe he's just not an out-and-out Joseph striker. Maybe I had him wrong from last season.
Yeah. Or maybe he's just good at a lot of things. Yeah. And for Nance, what's fun about this is he's a coach who will tinker and move and change because he has a process to what he does. When things work, he'll figure out what part of it works and then sort of bring that back in. We saw last year the way he developed Kai Kamara into like what he wanted it to be. It was give and take between Kai's abilities and how Kai plays and what Wilfred Nancy wants. And so this obviously at a different level, but it's going to be really interesting as well.
I think we have to mention that the goal scoring out of midfield from Columbus has drastically helped this team as well. That Darlington Nagbe is chipping in and Aiden Morris is chipping in. And this game could be won or lost in the midfield between those two, Morris and Nagbe, and Wobodo from Cincinnati.
Amundsen gets the goal in this one. So he's now into the starting team, obviously filling in
shrewd for Will Sands. Shrewd move by Columbus to pick him up as soon as Will Sands went down.
They love an MLS veteran. They would never go over season by a player if they could. They would just pick MLS.
It's
players.
A good pickup. He wasn't getting his time at New York City, and he's an experienced player in MLS, won a championship with New York City. They bring him in right away, and it's already paying dividends.
Let's move down to Florida. El Clasico del Sol. Not a TM official name, but I'm going to continue to push it because I love it. Look at that smile from Sasha. Sasha loves it.
Oh, I don't like it at all, actually.
Why not?
I don't like it. It's made up.
It's made up?
The classic of the sun.
Yeah. It's the Sunshine State. Yeah, did you not know that?
Oh, no. I live there.
Oh, you were aware of that it was the Sunshine State.
Yeah.
And you still didn't like it.
No.
I thought it was one of those situations where once you had the information.
Oh, no.
I would.
I'm a very informed person.
Okay. Just, yeah. Well, maybe next week Sasha won't be on the show and other people will be and they'll like it and we'll just keep using it. El Clasico del Sol, Miami hosting Orlando, 7:30 p.m. Eastern time. Orlando coming off a 1-1 draw against NYCFC. Erkan Kara, third goal in four matches. He gets the go-ahead goal. Talis Magno forced on because of injury 10 minutes in. NYCFC poured the pressure on. They got the equalizer from Gabe Siegel. His first MLS goal, which is what he's out there for, and a 1-1 draw. I put out last night a tweet for instant replay plays because I filled in for Andrew Wiebe of like controversial calls, anything you saw. And the most tweets I got back were Orlando fans just complaining about Orlando having nothing to do with referees. So here's one I just pulled out from at Spot on Twitter. Who says, why doesn't Orlando generate any attack? I get the refs have little to do with this, but man, I'm really getting bummed out watching the same thing match after match.
Me too. Orlando's been the most consistent team in the league at being inconsistent. They win, they lose, they win, they lose, they win, they lose. Now they're four or five games without a win. They had a good offseason. They brought in some good players. I like some of the players they've brought in. Martin Ojeda has shown some flashes, but he doesn't start every game. Maybe the best player they picked up this offseason was Duncan Maguire in the super draft.
Yeah.
Facundo Torres was dominant last season, one of the best young players in the league, gets a fat new contract and has done zip this season. Oscar Pereira has got a big job on his hands to try to figure out what he needs to do to make this team better.
And it is something where you know that they'll work hard. You know they'll be in a playoff conversation. You know the floor with Oscar's fairly high. We talked about it for a long time last week. We thought the ceiling was higher. And that's where I think for these fans, a disappointment comes. But I was shocked to see like the flood of Orlando fans of their frustration where Kara got a goal. Kara had chances. Like there are some positives that are coming out of it. Again, you go to this could be a big game. Go and beat Miami. Make everyone happy. Make everyone forget about that. Move on. Sort of get into the flow as you go into the summer and you hope that those new guys sort of can settle in as the season goes along. Let's talk El Capitan.
Wait. I just got to say, I give Miami the edge in this game because Joseph Martinez owns Orlando. I saw that firsthand when I was there.
Okay. The fathers. You're filling in very well for Andrew right now.
Is he saying
his favorite same? Thing in the world was when Joseph was the father of Orlando.
When I played in Orlando and he scored some ridiculous goals against us. The one where he chops, you know, yeah. Jonathan Spector and does a little dink. And then I think when they beat us in the
Which open, that was for the record.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. And then when they beat us in the Open Cup semifinal, and I believe he was injured, but he was at home on
That's
his couch.
That's the one where he was laughing.
Posting a video.
Yeah. So you think he brings that to Miami?
Oh, I love it. I loved it so much. I mean, I hated it back then for until I left Orlando, but he's such a character, and I think he'll be really up for this game. They didn't start him midweek so that they can start him on the weekend. I'm sure of it. I give Inter the edge.
They just have no midfield.
Yeah.
David Ruiz was suspended. I believe he's at the U20 World Cup.
Yeah, he's gone to the U20 World Cup.
So it's going to be Ulloa, which is just not a situation you want. And they brought in Arroyo, which is great. And Arroyo, I think, has filled in some for Gregory, but you're filling in for DP that's gone with a no partner.
They're going pretty deep now.
Yeah. Sean Mota out. They do look better along the back line. And then Kamal Miller will help them, even though the move was to open up money to get Busquets and Messi or whatever it was. I think Kamal Miller
is a good player.
So let's go to El Capitan, though. 8:30 p.m. Eastern time, Dallas hosting Houston. FC Dallas, a 2-1 win over Vancouver on this weekend. Jesus Ferreira scored both goals. That gives him 44 all-time in MLS regular season play in his Dallas career. That is two away from passing Kenny Cooper for second all-time in FC Dallas history. Do you know who he just passed? Because I know you love your MLS history and trivia. And who's first?
So he's in fourth right now.
No, he's third right now.
He's third. Oh, he just passed somebody.
Yes.
Just passed. If I had to guess, I would guess Carlos Ruiz.
You're close. Carlos Ruiz is currently fifth.
Okay. So I would guess Jeff Cunningham is first.
No.
No. Did he pass Jeff Cunningham?
No.
No.
Yeah.
Man, I suck.
No, you're okay.
FC Dallas. I don't know.
All right,
Wild
so
one, Ronnie O'Brien.
No, the guy he just passed, I would say players hated playing against him, probably equal to Carlos Ruiz, but he is more recent than all the guys you named.
Wow, What am I missing here?
This may have been while you were in Belgium. Panamanian International, yeah, Blas Perez.
Couldn't even think of his name. Blas Perez, man, I hated him.
Yeah, everyone did, which is great. And Dallas fans loved him, and I loved him.
Okay,
and
so he just passed Blas Perez.
Yeah, and then first all time is so far ahead.
Oh, Jason Christ.
Yeah. Cunningham's a good guess. Ruiz and Cunningham just weren't on teams long enough. Yeah. And I think similar for Kenny, right? Kenny
Cunningham scored so like 30 goals for like 30 different teams.
Exactly. Columbus, RSL, you keep going through it. So Jesus Ferreira on the verge of passing Kenny for second all time, though. It sort of shows his impact. He's 21 now. He's a DP. Like, he has been everything. He scored two in this game. The first goal, a big moment. The second goal, though.
Sick.
It felt like the game slowed down for him, and he was like, I know exactly how I can score this goal, and I'm just going to wait for it.
Yeah, we were like watching on 360, like, shoot it, finish it. Oh, chop him. Okay, take your time now. Nope, quick one. It was unbelievable. He was my player to watch last night, and he did not disappoint. There's pressure on him in Dallas, which is typically not a big pressure place to play, but when you're that young, making that salary and being the captain of the team, now having World Cup experience. Yeah. And then you start being linked with big European clubs and the press and stuff like that. He seems like a very humble kid, and I've seen him up close for the past few years. We played against Pepe. We played against him. Talking to the center backs of the LA Galaxy, they were like, playing against Ferreira is 10 times harder than playing against Pepe. He's just constantly moving. And I loved what I heard from head coach Nico Estevez this week. He said, what makes Jesus Ferreira different is his ability to do repeated actions throughout the game at a very fast pace. Something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And I saw that up close. This kid never stops running, never stops sprinting. You think he's got to be dead tired by the end of the game, and he doesn't stop. He's a dark horse for me for the Golden Boot.
Do you care if he's not always as the center forward, quote unquote?
No.
Like, if Jesus Jimenez starts and he gets slid out wide or deeper.
I mean, I don't love it. I prefer if he stayed as the number nine consistently. And I also think yesterday he probably played with a little bit of a chip on his shoulder with how much the media and the Instagram and Twitter is talking about Balogun, you know?
That's the point, though, right? Rivalry.
Yeah.
Iron sharpens iron.
And if he gets another 18 to 20 goals this season after backing up what he did last season, he's going to continue to be in the mix for that number nine spot on the U.S. national team.
Houston trying to win it. They've lost four of the last five El Capitans. Of course, now this is part of the larger Copa de Tejas with Austin. But you don't like that I made something up. But everyone gets to make up a rivalry name. But I don't get to make one up. But El Capitan, obviously the historic one for them. They have not won on the road yet this year. So this would be their first road win. Ache will return to this team. I think there's some positivity for Houston. This would only increase it if they're able to get a result in this one. Let's finish up with our last big rivalry match. Rocky Mountain Cup, 9:30 p.m. Eastern time. The Colorado Rapids hosting RSL. The Rapids coming off that 4-0 loss in Atlanta. RSL weather delayed. Ends up being a 0-0 draw at home against the Portland Timbers. I've really enjoyed RSL over the last few weeks. I think Andres Gomez is for real. That's added another element to them. Danny Musovski coming back from injury. That adds another element for them. Outside of Severino, there's not one pure match winner, but it feels like there are six or seven guys where if you can just find the right games for them, there's a lot there for Pablo Mascherano to work with.
The thing that surprises me is they've given up way too many goals and been a little easy to play against, which is not the sign of a Pablo Mascherano team. So I think he's got his work cut out for him to get that, quote unquote, dog in them back. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And this is the Pablo Mascherano Cup. Like, this is his former team, former captain of. Now he's the head coach of Salt Lake. I'm sure he's going to have his team ready for this game, and I think it's going to be a very physical game.
Robin Fraser, also quite familiar with this region of the world in this rivalry. It should be a really fun one in general. We saw, I think it was Michael Barrios up top in the last game coming off. Cabral's had a couple good weeks. Diego Rubio was out. He seems like the one they can't afford to miss.
No, he needs to score goals like he did last season.
And just be on the field. His presence changes this team completely. So we'll see what happens in this one. That's a big match. Let's go to some expansion here. San Diego officially awarded the 30th team in Major League Soccer. They will begin competition in 2025. Sasha, you're from west of the Hudson, so it's all the same to me. I assume you're familiar with San Diego. What are your thoughts about this name?
I'm very excited about San Diego. I grew up in Southern California. You know, it adds another team to LA Galaxy, LAFC, San Jose, California rivalry, which I think will be awesome. They've already got the stadium built down there. I'm really excited for this team to start and see how they build their team. Were you not listening to what I was saying? Goss is looking through his notes.
Sorry about
that. I'll keep going. I'll keep talking about San Diego. Beautiful city down by the bay.
Great weather.
Oh, amazing.
You can guarantee. So you talked about, I think, the market. That's the big one that's exciting, right? It's a top 20 market, I believe, size-wise in America. They don't have a ton of other sports. We saw Manny Machado, a part of the ownership group. The Padres are really the only pro sports team now that the Chargers have left. That's historically been good for MLS teams. But the other thing is, like, MLS expansion teams have just hit.
They've all hit.
Yeah.
And what a destination to go live. If you're a European player, right. San Diego is awesome. You know, teams have done preseason there in recent years. It's just a beautiful place to live.
So as you see the news come out about this, the Mansour family is the ownership group that's taking this over. They are partnered with the Sequan native tribe in the area, which owns the Sequan Casino, which I stayed on last year. And I wouldn't have known how to pronounce it if I hadn't stayed there and asked a million people for 3 days. My wife will tell you, great lazy river. She loves a lazy river. I hate pools in general, but she likes lazy rivers. So if you're ever looking to be in the San Diego area, you could stay there. So they have local ownership tie-ins. They have, obviously, the Mansour family based out of England, Egyptian by their background. They own the Right to Dream Academy, which is the big tie-in here. So Tom Vernon, he was the Manchester United scout in Africa about 25 years ago. He left that to start what has become the Right to Dream Academy in Ghana. They've now opened up one in Egypt as well, where they bring in some of the best players from across West Africa through trials. They fully fund their education and their lives. And then they purchased FC Nordsjælland in Denmark, and they will move the players who they believe are elite players, Champions League players, into Denmark. They'll play there, and then they will sell them across the world. The big name right now, Mohamed Kudus in Ajax, who came through this system. That is the ownership group. So the tie-in here is, this is, from my understanding, another big team like Nordsjælland for them to push their best young players into while also competing at the top level.
Yep.
And that is exciting, because I think when we look at MLS and we look at what's been fun and exciting about the expansion teams is having other styles.
Sure.
Not just, oh, this is what Atlanta did. Okay, so then we'll just do it and we'll do it and we'll do it. And that partially is because it won't all work. And also because it's a big world of this sport. Not everyone has to go get an Argentine 10. Like, there's so much talent in the world to bring in. So when you talk about now a club that could have some of the best young players from West Africa brought here, plus a market that is on the Mexico-US border that Cholos has tapped into in the past, Brandon Vasquez, Paul Areola, those guys went the other way. Now you can start saying, oh, can players come this way? They're going to build what we believe is a robust academy because they believe very much in having that setup and having that pipeline for players. I think that from the outside is one of the most exciting parts about this, is just they have an ethos. They have a vision. It's going to be new to this league. It's going to help build the pipeline of MLS as a selling league. And it feels like they can hit the ground running because they're not going to be searching for who they are.
It's a very exciting model. I spoke to Kevin Egan last night on MLS 360. As I explained to him, there are more than one way to play this game.
Yeah.
Thiago Almada plays the number 10 in a totally different way that I played as a number 10, because I wasn't fast and I wasn't dribbling past people. But I had to think ahead of time and things like that. So there's more than one way to play this game. There's more than one way to set up a team tactically. There's more than one way to build a club. And this is a new model that we haven't really seen with this Right to Dream Academy and bringing those players over, putting them into the MLS squad. Will it work perfectly from day one? Who knows? But it's going to be really exciting to watch to see how their model will compete against other models in MLS.
The understanding is, as I said, they'll build a pretty extensive academy. They're going to go out and search for the best young players around this country and, I believe, Mexico. But that's just me saying it. They also then have that connection. I'm going to throw an early name out there. Jimmy Traore, Seattle Sounder legend, assistant coach, left the Seattle Sounders, I believe, a year ago to join Right to Dream as a coach. So he heads the International Academy, which is based in Denmark at FC Nordsjælland. I don't know. I'm just throwing a name out there. That wouldn't be shocking, where you do need some MLS experience.
Yep.
You're hoping there's someone in the room to say, hey, this isn't Denmark. Yep. Like, this is a different league in a different way, which hasn't gone great for every expansion team, but went pretty well for St. Louis. So you never know. That feels like someone where, okay, how do we marry these two things? That's someone who knows what's going on.
Yeah, that's a great shout. Jimmy Traore has MLS experience as he was an assistant coach in Seattle for a long time after finishing his career there. It's just going to be interesting to watch over the next year and a half as they have this time to build, who they hire, mm-hmm. how much time they, you know, if they hire somebody out of an MLS team now,
right.
that gives them that full year and a half like St. Louis had.
With Carnell, yeah.
With Carnell, they hired their coach early. They had him coach their MLS Next Pro.
He assisted John Hackworth.
Okay, last season.
Which is the craziest thing I've ever heard.
But also getting players to perhaps start moving to San Diego right. next summer. To get fully acclimated 6 months ahead of time before
so
their first preseason.
So you have guys to welcome in that first class.
Exactly.
Yep.
That planning ahead, I think, helps a lot for these expansion clubs.
Yeah, it's going to be exciting. It's going to be fun to watch. The NWSL team has hit like a home run. They are playing at Snapdragon. I believe they set the record over 30,000 fans yep. for their playoff game. So the market's ready. It's exciting. It's a big one. It expands the footprint again geographically. There's a lot to like in here. And... as we said, it's going to be unique, which I think for non-San Diego people, that makes it fun to be like, oh, how does this work? How does sure. this hit in MLS? So that's the big news in San Diego. You can go to MLSsoccer.com for more updates on that. We will obviously continue talking about this as it comes to fruition. As Sasha said, now you start to see who's going to be the first signings, who's going to be the other pieces. I will say this, and this is just me looking at numbers and guessing, they're a wealthy family. So the money is there for a Kaká. Avella.
Okay, I was going to say Kaká's been retired for a while now.
Yeah, okay. The point was that first big name, though.
I hope so. I mean, the big names always are the big draw early on, yeah. and we want to see how they fit into MLS and what kind of leaders they can be. So I hope we see a superstar in San Diego from day one. That would be really cool.
Do you have one picked out?
I don't want to steal yours.
I don't have one.
Was it not someone threw out Neymar?
I just said a name. Oh. That was not mine.
Oh, well, that would be amazing.
That would be amazing. Yeah,
that would be awesome.
Sasha Kleschen guarantees Neymar headed to
here
San
we go.
Diego.
Headline. Here we go.
Oh, my God. Let's dig into some youth talk some more. We just talked youth development with Right to Dream. I was down at the MLS Next Flex competition this weekend. 18 matches on MLS season pass from U15, 16, 17, and 19 levels to qualify for MLS Next Cup, which is now the national championship. You obviously worked in the LA Galaxy Academy a bit over the last few years. You played soccer in this country. You came up in this country. You've been around for a while. I talk about this stuff a lot. I just wanted to pick your brain of like, I feel things have improved for many different reasons and not everywhere. But in general, and I can go into why, I'm curious your thoughts or feelings around what has been built, MLS Next, but just more how soccer players are developed in this country now.
I don't think that development comes down to coaching per se. I just know off of my personal experience growing up, I played on a regular club soccer team until mm-hmm. I went to college that practiced twice a week. I myself went out and whatever, went to a park with a friend and hit free kicks or played in the front yard with my brother or worked on things on my own because I wanted to be the best I could be. That yeah. was my development. And it comes from the player. I don't think these coaches are out there turning these players into superstars. They have to have it in them to want to be the best version of themselves. However, what has changed is these environments that these players can get into at such a young age, professional environments. So having worked when I got my B license in the LA Galaxy Academy to see these kids who they act like pros
yeah.
at 15 years old. They go to school.
They roll themselves out.
They go to school at the LA Galaxy Stadium.
Mm-hmm.
They train in the morning at the same time that the first team trains. They get in the gym. They eat lunch. They go to class. They do another gym workout or a technical workout, and they finish some more class. They're acting like pros. They're in the stadium. They're in the locker room. They're, you know, it's preparing them yeah. to play for the first team at 17.
Yeah.
I was nowhere close to be ready to play for a first team at 17. It just was not my development. I didn't have that environment to play in.
How much of a shock, because the part about that also I think is interesting is how comfortable they are with many of the requirements of a professional player of like, So at MLS Next, you have non-MLS academies, but some of the biggest clubs in the country, Soccer's and, you know, Albion in San Diego, and some of these clubs, Kendall, that have been around forever, that produce incredible players. The coaches are good. And they get the talent, as you said, they give them opportunity. But then you talk to an MLS academy at U15, they're watching tape on the other team and analyzing the way a pro does. How much shock did you have when you got into the pro ranks when that stuff started happening? And how much of that is the big step, as you said?
Yeah, that was a big part of my development that had to happen in my first like year or two as a pro.
Yeah.
My club team, we played a 4-4-2. That was it.
Didn't know what the other team was going to do. Didn't matter. You didn't adjust on the fly.
That was, we never like adjusted in a game to a 4-3-3 or anything. Right. The entire game we played in a 4-4-2. And I went to college and we played in a 3-5-2. And that was that.
Best formation.
Best formation, yeah, obviously.
Manny Schellstein, obviously.
That's why I dominated, you know? This whole team was built around this number 10, the skinny kid from California with long hair. But then I jump into the pros. And then even in the pros under Bob Bradley, the way that we watched film back then is so different
on
than
the VHS.
Today. On a DVR.
Okay.
And you would walk into the locker room on a Sunday after playing on a Saturday, and there would just be a list of initials on the board with timestamps next to them. It would say SK, 2 minutes and 2 seconds. So that meant at 2 minutes and 2 seconds into the game on the clock, mm-hmm. Sasha Kleshchen did something wrong or did something right.
And you just went and watched it yourself?
No, we watched it as a team. But these were all the notes. He had already watched the game back and written them down. So then we went through the game and he would have to be pausing and rewinding and getting mad because he's not stopping at the right time. Like, can you imagine how we watched film, how long it took to watch film the day after a game? Nowadays, it's all on Y-Scout, the clips that are put together. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
So the fact that young kids are getting that experience, learning about the difference between a 4-4-2 and a 4-2-3-1 and a 4-3-3 and how to build against a team that presses with three or only presses with two, it's light years ahead in only the last 20 years.
And I think that's part of the, like, if let's just say as a young player, you go over to an Anderlecht, you have to learn the language, learn the environment, learn the food. That's just one thing you don't have to learn, which I just think gets you the half step ahead. I was impressed by the quality of what I saw. I've said this a couple times, but every year or two, a new MLS Academy sort of adds themselves to Seattle's become a serious contender with the Dallas and the Phillies. I talked about Columbus coming out of the last one. I think the Revolution are starting to get in that space as well. We see the three, but it's not just that. And what I love about what they do is they are basically looking at things and saying, you're a good attacking player. Look at DeJuan Jones, though. Let's convert you now. And you become a left back rather than being a converted left back at an older age. And they're doing a lot of that of like, trying to predict a bit your pro ranks, get you in the team, and then they watch film about the refs.
Which is why I've said it's not about development in our country. It's about identification.
Yeah.
You have to find these players that have something special and then nurture them, nurture their talent, and also nurture their mentality to help them believe in themselves that they can be the best. This is what Manny Schellschite did for me. I was a year before I met Manny, close to quitting soccer and being over it because people didn't recognize my talent. Mm-hmm. And I knew I had something, but I was small and I was skinny. And it took this old German from New Jersey to grab me from California and bring me to New Jersey and put me in an environment at Seton Hall University with a very good team around me that challenged me every day. We had a lot of guys go pro from that team and guys that in training every day made it hard on me. But he made me believe that I could play at the next level and put me in an environment. So for him, it's not like he taught me something in training or told me,
when
you receive the ball here, you've got to play it there. No, he never told me that. He said, go play the game, enjoy the game, challenge yourself to be the best. And I believe in you. That's what we need to do. We need to keep identifying those types of players.
This will be the first episode of ETR ever that Bob Bradley will enjoy because we talked about Manny Schellschite because he does not like us, but he loves Manny and he loves the New Jersey soccer.
I've got a shout out to Manny Schellschite. He's in the hospital right now. He's doing better. I spoke to him yesterday and I know
he's still around Fields though.
Yes.
It is amazing. If you don't know his story, you can go look it up because I believe some people have put they're putting together some documentary stuff around him.
Yeah, there's a great documentary about Manfred and, you know, one of the legendary American coaches who has, you know, the very first coach to get his A license in U.S. soccer history, really a coaching educator as well, a mentor and friend of Bob Bradley and Bruce Arena. I can go on and on about Manny, but I know some of us family and friends were worried about him, but it seems like he's doing a little bit better. And I hope he's all right.
That's great. We are hashtag haul in as we continue on here, which takes us to our next thing, which is the U20 World Cup. And you talked about environment, identification, the challenge of playing at an international level for many players is that first time where they recognize, oh, I can do this, or these are the steps I need to take. I talk about it a lot with, I think, Georgi Mihailovic. When he went and trained at Bologna 2 years ago, it felt like he realized that he could dominate. And then he came back and dominated. Sometimes it's mental. Sometimes it's not. This USU 20 team, they're going to Argentina, which is a last minute change. It was originally supposed to be in Indonesia. They were refusing to host the draw, I believe, because Israel was in the tournament. So they were taken away as host. Argentina becomes host, quite honestly, for the US, probably more convenient. It's an easier trip, not by much, but you don't have to go around the world. The U.S. opens up on the first day of play this Saturday, 2 p.m. Eastern time, against Ecuador, who have been dominant at this level. They then face Fiji in their second game, Slovakia in their third game. That's next Tuesday, as well as next Friday. I believe it is four of the top third place teams go through. And of course, the top two teams in each group go through to the next round under Mikey Varas. We have the full roster here. I can go through it all, but what excites you the most? Like, what jumps out to you when you're going to go watch this? Who is it that you want to see, or what is it that you want to see?
It's more who. There are two players that really stick out to me that I think have very, very bright futures. The first is Jack McGlynn. Reminds me a lot of myself. I've texted Jim Curtin this over the past 2 years.
Okay.
And he writes me, he was the first one to make mention of it. And okay. I'm like, okay, this kid is tall and skinny. He wears number 16. He just sees the game. I believe he has the tools to be.
Have you talked to him?
I did. I ran into him at the media and marketing tour, and I told him I was a big fan of him and that whatever he was doing, keep doing it, because the sky's the limit for him. And I really hope he believes in himself, because I believe in him a lot. I think he'll have a big tournament and continue to grow. The other one is Cade Cowell, who I think needs desperately, and the San Jose Earthquakes need him to have a good tournament to get his confidence up. He's a man who will in this tournament be playing against boys his own age.
Right.
But physically, he's a beast, and he has the final product, but he hasn't done it yet this season. It's almost like Espinoza is getting the ball and getting all the finished product, and he needs to step up for the San Jose Earthquakes. But I hope in this tournament, it gives him some confidence. He gets a couple of goals, a couple assists, puts himself back on the map, brings that back to San Jose, and then has a really good second half of the season.
I like those two shouts. I think that's exciting. I believe Chance Cowell actually signed his homegrown deal. He is deciding right now between the U.S. and Mexico, like Cade had to do. I'm excited for a lot of these pieces. I think McGlynn's a great one, because while we get to see McGlynn for Philly, this is team. Right. And when you talk about a 10 in your system and what you could do, like if he could do what we think he could do at this level against these opponents, he's going to start getting talked about. But in that position, which is big for him. Daniel Edelman will be another big piece behind him. He has been the captain of this group in central midfield. But that midfield, Obed Vargas, Owen Wolf, Nico Tsakir, like that is a loaded part of this team. That's the real threat. There's not a ton on the wings. Kevin Paredes is the one. Another guy where, okay, show us how much you've grown. Now you see you can play at Wolfsburg. Can you dominate games? Can you be a star? Can you take that next step?
This is you could make the argument for any player on this roster, in my opinion, to be a star in this tournament, because they're all pros now. I think back to my U20 World Cup 2005, I was still in college and I was in awe. We played against Messi in the first game of the tournament, and Sergio Aguero and Pablo Zavaleta and Lucas Biglia. This was like a whole different level for us, but it opened our eyes and it made us believe and dream. And these guys are all pros. I'm so excited to see how far this team can go in the tournament.
Yeah. The other big one is Josh Widener. I think he, like Jalen Neal, I think he has national team potential that you see at a young age that you don't really see from center backs, but as a passer. And then Justin Che, I think just came out that Hoffenheim's going to decline the option. So he'll come back to Dallas this summer. This is a chance for him to sort of reset the conversation around him, which will be exciting. So those games coming up, we'll have more coverage of that for you coming up over the course of the week. Florian Balogun, we have not really talked about on this show. He's playing for the U.S. Yay, yay.
I'm excited.
You're stoked?
Yeah.
Would you like to get back on the field and set him up a little bit?
No, he's got Christian Pulisic to do that, who's the could go down as the best American ever. You got Weah, Aronson, Reyna. we've got players all over the field, yeah, except we've been rotating a striker between Josh Sargent and Pepe and Ferreira and Pifok and Haji Wright. We haven't found the one who has grasped the spot. Now, do we know if Balogun is going to be that guy to grasp that spot? We don't know, but his profile, it excites us.
I think it's a little harsh because I do think, like, goalkeeper, center forward's one where you age, you get the position, and those other guys are performing at young ages, but those are positions we're expecting, where I think Pepe or Sargent or Jesus Ferrer could be that guy, but having more options than less is always better.
Yeah.
And that's really exciting. We're going to talk national team coach later because I'm excited about a rumor that I randomly saw. But we have to talk coaches at your level. We got a mailbag question to finish up here from a fan. His name's Alako Skindirin. I believe I pronounced that right. Thank you to all my Armenian friends. So there was an Armenian player at MLS Nextflex. He told me how to pronounce his name. I told Aleko about him. I said, this is how you say his name. He goes, that's not right. And it's like, but I hadn't told him
his own name.
But I hadn't told him. So Aleko just heard me say in Armenian and go, this guy's going to get it wrong. Doesn't matter what comes out of his mouth. I'm going to correct him. And he did so. Aleko says, is Carlos... Give me a
Jaguande.
The best manager you've ever played for, and are you feeling confident heading into the men's league playoffs because your top scorer is close to returning from injury? I assume that's Aleko returning from his 750th injury.
So Aleko has played two games this season with... Okay, so to back it up, I play in a 6v6 soccer league down in Chinatown on Saturday mornings with Aleko and a few other...
They fly you in from LA.
I fly in for the games every weekend. And Carlos is our team manager, social liaison.
Okay.
Also plays every once in a while.
Okay.
Aleko leads the league, and he's played in two games. He leads the league in shots off target.
Nice.
It's unbelievable. He's never seen a shot he doesn't like.
You can't score if you don't shoot.
Yeah. I mean, I just pass the ball into the back of the net.
Oh, you know. So you don't actually have to shoot.
Oh, no, I score, but I just pass in the corners.
It's sixes?
It's six plus a goalie.
Okay, so sevens.
Yeah.
Like frame goal.
Yeah, small. Like
Are you playing on the one in the outfield under the bridge? Or is this
One of the fields we find.
Otherwise,
there are three fields. Sarah D. Roosevelt, that's Cherry Street under the bridge, and on Essex Street at the Seward Park Tennis Court.
I know. I'm going to Essex Street to see Fast X in a little bit. So I know New York. Don't worry about it.
What's that?
Fast X?
Yeah.
You don't know about family? I live life a quarter mile at a time. Dominic Toretto and his family.
Fast and the Furious movie?
Yeah, it's the newest one.
Oh my gosh.
It's the greatest film franchise in history.
I stopped watching it back.
When?
First two.
Well, that's where you missed out.
No.
Third movie, rough. Fourth, okay. Fifth, that's where it comes back around. And since then, it's been on fire.
There's no way.
Yeah. There's come on. No way. All right. We made a bet in the green room.
Yeah, we did.
We made a bet where I bet you that I thought Jordan Morris would score 18 goals, all comps or more.
Well, first it started in MLS, and then I threw you a bone and gave you all comps.
Which is Leagues Cup and then playoffs.
And playoffs. Yeah. I don't think he gets to 18 goals.
Okay, because that's not his role on the team.
Not his role. I don't think Jordan Morris has the killer instinct of a full-on goal scorer. Yeah. To get 18 goals. Do you know how hard that is to get 18 goals in a season?
Yeah.
Doesn't happen that often.
No. And Jordan Morris is going to do it this year. Okay. So, new bet.
Okay.
I win. You have to see Fast Five.
Fast
You have to watch the
fast
whole movie.
10?
No. Five, because you got to get into the flow. You got to go to the Brazil one.
Then you think I'm going
to
watch 6, 7,
I don't think. I know. Okay. Everyone who watches that movie. Okay.
I'll do it on one of my flights across the country.
You got to decide something for me. I don't know what it is. I'll come do Waterboy at your... Sixes game.
There you go.
Yeah. I'll wear the whole get up. It'll be a whole thing. You can embarrass me.
Okay.
It'll be fun. So. Who else on this team? Quality?
We got Aleko Eskandarian, Chris Wingert, former MLS
RSL
defender for
legend.
A long time. RSL legend. Steve Nash. Ever heard of him? Two-time NBA MVP.
He's the brother of a former Canadian international.
Martin Nash.
Yeah. I've heard of him.
That's the only time Steve Nash has ever been referred to as the brother.
Martin Nash.
Two-time NBA MVP. Put some respect on his name.
I'm just a soccer guy.
No,
man.
Honestly,
I don't even know.
Steve is an amazing guy and an amazing soccer player. I connect really well with him on the field.
You guys are the you're the engine.
Yeah, we are we're like the two midfielders. We're like Xavi and Iniesta of the Bowery Premier League.
Whoa, a lot just happened.
It's very fun.
Yeah.
Entertainment value on that team.
How many knees get blown out?
We don't move very fast anymore.
Yeah.
But the ball moves fast.
That's all you need.
That's all you need.
That's the beauty of the game.
It is.
High pressing, I assume, as
no
well.
No chance.
That's done?
I don't run anymore unless it's on the soccer field or the basketball court.
Do you at least warm up?
Barely.
Okay, so you still have
show up
perfect
and,
muscle.
Yeah, show up and play.
Okay, well, Sasha, it didn't work out for you on this one. We had to take a break. You had to do a whole thing. So clearly you needed to stretch for this. We'll teach you about it, but it was a great fill-in performance. Do you want to come back and do it again?
I appreciate it. You know, when we do these Wednesday night 360 shows, I stay out here all week. So in a couple of weeks when we got some more midweek games.
So you liked it.
I will be here.
You know, normally there's more people. Are you going to be able to fit in with everyone?
All right, is everyone going to be able to fit in with me?
Yeah.
I take up a lot of space over here.
You're the Cucho who you don't need to score. You just want touches.
No. I want assists.
Yeah, right. Okay. Yeah. Even if they go off other players first and then come back to
Yeah, it doesn't matter. As long as like...
As long as you set records.
Yeah, just don't mess them. Don't miss them.
Okay. I will work on that.
Don't miss the tap-ins, dude.
Everyone, enjoy Rivalry Week, U20 World Cup as well. Congratulations to San Diego. Congratulations to all the fans in that area. Congratulations across the board. There are now 30 teams in Major League Soccer. We were not sure that this would be a thing one day. We will have
12 teams in 2006, my rookie year.
Yeah.
Unbelievable where this league is right now. LAFC is worth $1 billion.
And the team you played for doesn't exist anymore.
Doesn't exist anymore, which leaves me as their all-time leading assister.
Really?
Can never be broken.
And that's all you care about.
That's all that matters, dude.
And that's all you all need. Thank you for listening, everyone, and we'll see you next time. We'll be right back.